In this podcast, Nathan Blair, founder of the Somatic School, explores how somatics, love, and leadership intersect. He speaks about neuroscience and shares why leaders can act as co-regulators, using grounding, breath work, and presence to create safety and connection. Blair frames love as an active practice that shapes our bodies, rewires our brains, and transforms organizational culture through empathy, attunement, and trust. Hi, I'm Emily Walker.
And I'm Johnny Hammond, and today we are joined by Nathan Blair, founder of the Somatic School. This is the third time we've had the pleasure of being with Nathan, and just a little bit of background again for those that haven't heard us talking with Nathan. You know, after leaving the corporate world to coach full time, Nathan immersed himself in somatic practice. Over the years, he learnt from founding thinkers and practitioners in somatic psychology, interpersonal neurobiology, and body psychotherapy. The Somatic School was born out of the desire to create the coach training he himself had longed for.
So we thought we'd begin this podcast with a quote, because what came out of our previous conversations was a desire to talk about love. And as me and Johnny were talking earlier about this topic and, you know, what questions we might have and so on, what came out of that brief conversation was the universality of this. And so this quote came to mind from Rumi: "Your task is not to seek for love, but merely to seek and find all the barriers within yourself that you have built against it." So, Nathan, it's an absolute joy to have you here again, and talking potentially on the topic of somatics, love, and leadership. And I'm wondering what's landing for you as we meet again.
Well, first of all, just delighted to hear those three words go back to back: somatics, love, and leadership. A while ago, I actually had idea to write a book called Somatics, Love, and Process. So somehow that feels really, really serendipitous to hear you say those words like that. It is really good to be back here. I had such a good time in dialogue with you both previously. And this topic is a topic that is, no pun intended, but near and dear to my heart. And it's a big topic. And I was, similar to the two of you, I was also reflecting on this topic even between our last conversation and now, because I know that we suggested we might speak about it. And I think it's I wouldn't want to say a misunderstood topic, because I think that each person's understanding of what love may or may not be to them is entirely valid. And yet, I think that I would love for our conversation today to begin to shine a light on what love could be, you know, I take a wide view on that. And so, yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing where our conversation may lead today.
I love that, Nathan. And also, I wanted to bring in that, you know, when we talk, we're here very much about awakening conscious leadership, and leadership showing up in many different ways. And it was very interesting that at the beginning of this session, you actually said, do you mind if I spend a little bit of time, you know, actually just kind of doing some work to kind of ground myself because of the day you've had so far. And that spoke to me about leaders, and leaders who are in the cut and thrust of leadership, the day-to-day challenges that they face, and taking moments to be able to center, to ground, and to really kind of, you know, and for me, there was something about that felt very kind of figural, if you like, from the ground that was emerging. And I wonder if you could talk to that a little bit with regards to kind of, I don't know, becoming present, becoming in touch with yourself, rather than operating, you know, a lot from the head and, you know, that kind of energy that's going on there, but coming from the heart. I don't know, that was coming up for me.
Yeah, well, I love that. Thank you very much. And you know, I do think that this touches on a topic that I've also been reflecting on a lot very recently, so it's very live in me. I want to kind of preframe this by saying that, you know, at the Somatic School, we often say we're in the business of bridging, and we love to, I mean, an obvious one there might be body and mind, bridging that into a unified whole. But also we do take an interest in sort of spanning different disciplines, like theology, sciences, psychology, philosophy, and so on. And so just to begin, and I think this is probably may or may not set the tone for our conversation today, but when we look at theology, psychology, neuroscience, even biology, what I've found is that love shows up again and again as a sort of vital condition that makes change possible. And curiously, you know, coming in, so yeah, that's just kind of to set the frame a little bit in a sense for where I come from with this. But with regards to what you shared earlier about kind of a figural or demonstration of a certain kind of leadership, and to say, you know, to this, I have to turn toward my own experience and acknowledge with self-awareness, you know, where am I? What am I in right now? But then meet that with a certain kind of a certain quality of presence and or care, as to say that's valid and maybe that needs tending to. So that's a kind of love to me. And then for me to be able to sort of acknowledge and name that, share that with you, and for you to meet that and sort of set and meet that in kind of a open, flexing, accommodating a way, accommodating in the sense of in a way that's mutually resonant, you know, of course, not to, you know, with healthy boundaries in mind, but there's something there about the receptivity to that, you know, that I think that whole moment is a reflection of some of what we may talk about today, because there's something there about turning to oneself and our own experience in a loving way, and then having that be met by others in a kind of open, loving way. That is important. And the thing that's been very alive in me recently is to do with this, which is to do with, we spoke in a previous episode about nervous systems first, and responding and interacting at the level of the nervous system. In each interaction, there's the story. Just before this episode, you were talking about that journey. There's the story, the rhetoric, or the narrative. And Deb Dana, has this lovely phrase that says story follows state. And when she says state, she's referring to the autonomic state. And so upstream from our stories and our narratives, whatever they may be about, is the autonomic state that we're currently operating from. And one of the things I've been really live to recently is that it's quite incredible that when we're in each interaction, if we try to attune to the autonomic state of the other, and then be responsive to that, it has this, you know, I said this vital condition that makes change possible, but it has this way of sort of almost creating conditions within that support kind of harmonious interrelational interactions. There's something that gets met. I heard one of our Somanauts, a participant of our a graduate of our accredited diploma in Bordering into Coaching at the Somatic School recently, did a post on LinkedIn, and she said that she put it really beautifully. She said that there's something to the something in the spirit of that we can sort of respond directly to the scared mammal, you know, a lot of the time. That's beneath the level of the story, you know. And I really like that. I think we may have spoken about that last time, that we are, as humans, mammals, and at the mammalian level that we interact, there's something, although we are complex living systems, there's something simple about that. And we can set it, there's something sort of somewhat serviceful. This is a bit of a stretch to say selfless, but to sort of look to somebody else and kind of tune in and listen deeply and say, where is this person at, and how do I meet them there in a way that supports their nervous system, then we'll deal with the conversation and the story afterwards. It's all part of it, but it's almost like that what follows from that place seems to flow. And in leadership, that's incredibly powerful because quite often leaders are very unaware of the way that they may not only be misattuning to their team members, colleagues, direct reports, misattuning to the autonomic state that they may be in, but also similar that maybe even contributing to, all relationship is co-creation. So co contributing to the kind of dysregulation, disorganization, disintegration of that person's autonomic state, in any moment. And that happens very regularly.
And that talked to me about some resonant leadership, that resonance and we touched on before. And just with that in mind, Nathan, just at the top of this conversation, what does love, and particularly in the context of leadership, mean to you? You've already kind of touched on it, and I love this, state precedes story. I've heard it said, state, story, strategy, and who are we being? But first of all, just to kind of segue there, what does love mean to you, but particularly in the context of leadership?
Big question. And first of all, state, story, strategy is fantastic. I love that. There's a 19th century Danish philosopher and theologian, Kierkegaard, who wrote a book called Works of Love, and talks a lot about agape, this kind of this unconditional this sort of unconditional love. It's unconditionally receptive, giving, as maybe describes agape in short. And his position was that love is not primarily a feeling, but like a work of sorts. So something that's enacted in daily life. And I would that would be a good example of think of a thinker who begins to point to what I believe love is, which is when I relate to love, I relate to it less as a noun, but as a verb. And today's science really shows us the way in which we can be more loving. Love, I think, has connotations. People think of like a romantic or Valentine's Day kind of love, sort of like a sugary sweet, kind of slightly maybe cliche or I see love, and as it relates to leadership, I suppose I see love as a sort of trainable stance in a way, or like a inner in an, like an interior condition or a positionality of attuned presence that co-regulates bodies and body minds. It's a real it reorganizes and revises, rewires neural structures. Helps to kind of reorient meaning, a kind of like the story that follows that, and in that sense, it sort of enables, as I said, like a vital condition that makes change possible, any kind of change, healing, growth, pro-social action, so I think from that perspective, for me, to put it simply, love is a verb, and is entirely learnable.
And it's so, it speaks so much to, I mean, me and Johnny were, as I said, we were having a conversation earlier about this, and like, how would we define love as ourselves as well? And what I'm picking up on there is I love this idea of it being a verb and also it being work. It's not just a feeling, it's work. It's what we do and how we are in the world. And picking up on something you mentioned earlier is this sense of connecting, really connecting with the other at this visceral level of the nervous system, really attuning to the other. But what I'm hearing also is it's coming from a sense of that inner state of love. So connecting first with that inner state of agape, which is that sort of selflessness, that sense of That we have love within us, we are love within us, and then that is a connection with the other, the people around us. And that sense of it being unconditional, that sense of it being expansive and a work in itself is beautiful. And I think also it's very much resonates with a lot of Eastern teachings, ancient teachings as well, in that sense of the idea that we are whole and complete, and we are whole, creative, and resourceful. That sense of having a fullness about us that we can then meet the world with and meet and connect with others through as well. And it was very interesting when you spoke about leadership too, that idea that when that's not present, what happens then? What happens then? We have dysregulation, we have a jarring, if you like, and things don't are not cohesive anymore. So that kind of sense that love's a thing that helps us to be cohesive, as a community, as a group, as an organization, and also within ourselves too. And it's a, I mean, there are so many things to consider here, and I'm curious, what would you say when it comes to leadership? What's the difference between liking the people that you work with on that kind of, I like the people I work with, and the difference between that and actually leading with love.
Yeah. Wow. Lots of synchronistic moments in this conversation already. We have two things at the Somatic School. We say lead with love and leave with love. So let's break it down a bit, because I think this is something that like I said, in our training we can see that this can be learned. In fact, at the Somatic School we have a we call it our legacy statement, and that is simply that we might learn to love each other better. And that doesn't mean be nicer to each other. As you say, it might include that at times, but it doesn't mean just be nice. Be can't be nice is a funny nice may people that may conjure up ideas that we're always smiling. We're always agreeable, that we never disagree, there's no conflict. But actually I would argue that in certain contexts and situations that is not the loving thing to do, that the masks that we wear, or the kind of untruths that we tell, if that can actually be much more damaging, to relationship, to the organizational system, than to actually be honest. But there's a difference, right? So radical honesty, I think, often gets mis
Misappropriated, maybe.
yeah for brutal honesty. So, and actually I was having a conversation with about this earlier, which is that Carl Rogers has these three core conditions: empathic attunement, or empathy, which there's a lot to say about that in terms of how that relates to kind of neurophysiologically, and congruence, which is like the idea that we are aligned, that our feelings, thoughts, and actions align, you could say, so that there's a certain level of transparency to us that helps foster trust. And connection. And then unconditional positive regard. And the last one, I think, is the hardest to, not so difficult to define, but hard to put into practice. But hopefully today in the conversation, maybe give some tips into how you could actually do that. But unconditional positive regard is to hold people in the highest esteem, hold people in this positive regard. Unconditional is always a tall order. I think a certain way that I like to see that is that there's a certain kind of equanimity in how we are, how in our receptivity of others, and that we remain open even in disagreement. So I think that that's what unconditional positive regard can look like. So the reason I bring this up is because honesty can often look like congruence, right? So that what I think or feel I say out loud, for example, but without unconditional positive regard or empathetic attunement, that can really actually be violent. And people often use say I'm honest when actually they're an expletive. So because it just, you know, it gives you kind of like a kind of a way of saying, well, I'm just being honest with you, but actually no, you're just being some, you know. So I think so congruence without unconditional regard can be violent in some ways, and can cause harm and rupture, the relational rupture, and then unconditional regard without an empathetic attunement or empathic attunement without congruence can be kind of a false, you know, can be a sort of like a different kind of, weirdly enough, how to put it, a different form of disconnection in a way. Because if people don't feel that they can trust your affect or your smile or your affirmation or your praise, they can't trust that to be true because they sense there's something else, that's a misalignment, like a cognitive dissonance that can also break rapport and trust. So these things are all necessary and important to have in balance. And then, yeah, so I'll pause there, but I will, but there's, I'm mindful of your original question was about how is this different to just being like, I think you said friendly with your team members or something like that.
Liking, yes, there's some
Liking.
sense of, you know, what's the, you know, we you know, is it, what's the difference between liking the people that you lead and leading with love?
Right, yeah. So yeah, we can kind of, I think one way to address that would be to talk about it from more of a kind of bring some of the science in there, but I will pause for a moment just in case there's
Yeah.
anything on the previous.
I've got a question there. It's interesting you were talking to, because of course in leadership happens in relationship, which is what we're talking to. It doesn't happen in a vacuum. And I was really curious as you were talking there, and about the behaviors of leaders, what it is, you know, the affect you were talking about and the impact on others. And I was curious as to how we might experience leaders leading from love. You know, that was a question coming up for me. What might we see, hear, and feel?
Okay, fantastic. For this, I think it's best for us to take this out of the kind of realm of love as a sort of abstract idea and kind of ground it. One of the ways that this is something we continuously do at the Somatic School, we take theory, concept, abstraction, and then we ground it. How do we do that? Because we bring it into the body, basically. So it seems to us to be a pretty consistently reliable method of grounding what would otherwise be sort of abstract ideas. So if we think about love as a verb, as a doing thing, then one way, one for the first way we might think about this is like love as a kind of biological regulator in a way. It's a, or even a biological imperative. So safety and connection as experienced in the body, you know, through some of the science around this would be like oxytocin and vagal tone, the neuroception of that. So the neuroception of safety, neuroception is our sense of safety or threat within our environment. We have a sort of sense perception that is constantly scanning. In fact, it's for a survival imperative, it would be our kind of dominant sense perception, if anything. And although we might not be explicitly aware of it in the same way we are auditory sense or a visual or a tactile sense, but this is continuously running sort of underneath all the other everything else, because of course naturally it's keeping us safe, and that's of the utmost importance to our survival and our thriving, you know. So when our neuroception says I'm safe, you know, defensive states shift down. Plasticity or neuroplasticity opens up. So, as a leader, if you think of the people I'm interacting with, how am I going to get the best out of people? Well, if they are on high alert, high vigilance, defensive, or fearful, that is that really going to get the best out of people? I think that we our presence has the power to bring out the genius in others or diminish it. Our presence and how we receive people. I use that language of receptivity a lot, I think, because when I say receptivity, I really do mean that whatever another presents to you, it's how we receive that. In fact, I just did a video recently, actually on LinkedIn, about applying improv principles to life and to coaching. And so, like, just as a quick example of receptivity, I mean, yes, and is an improv principle that we sort of are an unconditional yes to whatever our kind of partners bring to the scene. And then we contribute to that with that's the yes, and then we contribute. So we take and then we build on that. And leaders can apply that same principle. So actually, just as a little snippet for now, I guess you could say is a very simple thing. You might see a leader then avoiding language. This is a very kind of very pragmatic example, but avoiding language like yes, but or no, or that sort of thing, and try to kind of hear what you're saying, hear what somebody's saying, receive it, and kind of acknowledge it, validate it, and then offer something else, even if that takes us in a different direction. To say something like, I can imagine how that would that could work in certain contexts. I'm wondering for this, what if it were like that? What if for this particular project, what if it were this? And so we're at no point does anyone be feeling kind of shut down, drawing in, drawing back, and withdrawing from the conversation, still engaged, still participating through that kind of simple yes and principle. That would be one thing. Yes, and actually neurophysiologically or neuro it does actually connect as well to autonomic states, because if we can bring yes and, which is almost like all ideas are good ideas, let's experiment, let's explore together, we have this kind of anchor. We call it like an anchor in ventral vagal, which is the nervous system autonomic state of safe and social, with where otherwise there might be a bit of sympathetic activation. So it's like, stepping into the unknown, uncertainty, not sure here, maybe this is above my, beyond my expertise or experience level, etc. But we can kind of meet people with that receptivity that says, bring your ideas to the table. I want to include you in this conversation. And that can prevent that classic meeting room situation where you have two or three, say it's a meeting of six or seven, you've got two or three kind of big contributors, big speakers, big voices in the room, and the rest are just sit there in silence for the entire meeting, wondering why they're even there. And so yes, and could contribute to creating an environment where people's feel seen, heard, and significant in some way, which for the biology is also important for, like I said, openness and neuroplasticity. So that's just a start. Yeah, there's more we could go into. That's just a little one.
It's very interesting, Nathan, because of course you speak up when we introduce you speak about interpersonal biology, and of course I think about Daniel Siegel and his work and the wheel of awareness, and thinking about somatic love and leadership, and about that. So it all starts with awareness of self, and very much that kind of, I think one of his points, isn't it, about kind intention, which in some respects speaks to me, and about that interpersonal aspect there, and it talks to me of love. I mean, I know it's kindness, but I don't know. I wonder if you could talk more to that and the somatic felt sense, that kind of, where how it all starts, with self-awareness, particularly from a somatic point of view.
Just to clarify, when you say how it all starts with self-awareness.
Yes. Okay, so maybe that's my belief. In a sense that, from my point of view, the most important thing is understanding self, knowing self, being self-aware of that physical sense of, am I, how am I between, how am I showing up, and having that real sense, and particularly somatically, that felt sense of like, when am I being triggered? When am I, so having that awareness, when am I coming from my values? How am I feeling when I'm aligned and congruent, and having that sense of unconditional positive regard starts with, from a Daniel Goleman point of view, from an emotional intelligence point of view, it starts with self-awareness. So that's really where I'm coming from. You might come from it from a different point of view. In fact, I'm curious.
Well, it's interesting because one of the things we say in body-oriented coaching is that you need to be regulated and resourced enough as a prerequisite for the work you're doing. The enough part is important though, because it's unrealistic to think that we will always be in the optimal state for coming into loving contact with another. But curiously, through interaction with others, we do co-regulate, and we can actually find that we become more resourced and more regulated through the interaction. But I do think it starts with intention, and I do believe that you are both, because Emily, you spoke to this earlier as well. I think you're both right with the. So Bill O'Brien is quote often quoted by Otto Sharma, the theory, the who created Theory U. MIT professor, Bill O'Brien is quoted for saying, this is actually paraphrasing it. I've paraphrased this for so long now that I can't remember the original, but it's something like, it's very similar to the interior condition of the intervener determines the effectiveness of the intervention. So that interiority, like what's happening inside of us, I do believe very much that that somewhat does determine in some ways what will happen outside. It's like a kind of causality. It's like a cause and effect. So we are very aware as body-oriented coaches that we do have some work to do prior to, like we said, to becoming resourced and regulated enough to effectively work with our clients. Same is true of leaders. What are we doing? Like at the beginning of this podcast, taking 10 minutes to do some movement and breath practice that I find to be very reliably resourcing for me, something I've been doing every morning for the last, I don't know, 5 years now, I think. So it's a long time. There's something about the recognition that when I do that, so I'll use myself as an example in this context, because I know that when I take the time, and it was only what, 10 minutes, I think 10, 15 minutes to do something that specifically kind of re kind of returns me to a state of, or let's say, how do I put this? People might be familiar with language like grounding or centering or resourcing or regulating. So let's just go with that for now. And that I know that taking 10, 15 minutes to do that will have an exponential effect on the effectiveness of the remainder of my day. And so our conversation now, the interactions that happen afterwards from just 10, 15 minutes at the beginning of the day, because it sort of compounds, because as I interact with you and my nervous system and my organism is well organized, basically, in a kind of neurophysiological perspective, from a neurophysiological perspective, that you then are going to be responding to that. So your nervous systems may actually sort of entrain to mine, not that you, or vice versa. Like, it could be, in fact, that it's the other way around. But either way, we're likely to have this kind of co-regulatory interaction that then sort of we then ripples out into every interaction that happens after that, and I think that that's one way that we can really be intentional about being a generative presence, and what we need to do for ourselves first, in order to then be loving towards others.
I
Can't
love
really.
that. Yeah, that whole that sort of sense of, that our practices, what we do as individuals, is not just, it's not just about ourselves, it's not just about regulating ourselves, but it also impacts how we then interact with everyone else, how we what kind of presence we have when we're engaging with the world for the rest of the day. I'm completely, again, my own experience. So meditating, doing stretching in the morning, and then a gratitude practice in the evening, hugely, I mean, I've noticed massive impact from that, on kind of neurologically changing the neural pathways of how I'm thinking, how I'm being with myself, the kind of the felt sense of how I am in relationship to other people, on a date. And the times when that doesn't happen, it's actually almost more noticeable when I don't do it because it's become so accustomed to it. But when I, on the odd occasion, don't have the chance to meditate or do some form of stretching, exercise, and so on in the morning, the impact is really, really noticeable on my interactions for the day. There seems to be also something very universal about that, but also very individual. So the practices seem very individual. So the what works for one person does not necessarily work. I mean, I know Johnny goes running, and it's not my kind of thing at all. But it's interesting how it seems to be almost very much about finding the things that work for you, the practices and the ways of working that work for you as an individual, and then really bring those into a regular kind of practice. So that you can really connect and bring that love from here to what you're doing externally, those interactions, the kind of connecting with others, so that again, you're talking about self-regulation, rewiring, all that beautiful stuff, really, really is so important for ourselves and for leaders of others as well, and ourselves as leaders. So that we can interact well, and be receptive. I love your use of the word receptive, being receptive to the other, using those aspects of, yes, and maintaining that kind of standpoint of love, unconditional positive regard, empathy, and congruence in those connections with others.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, you spoke to the idea that there are these this individual difference, and we've got to find the practices that work for us. And I absolutely agree. You also use the word universality, and what's interesting is I think that when it comes to how we are loving to towards others, and Johnny, the notion of like what do we see and hear and experience leaders do, there is a certain kind of universality to this at the level of the biology that I think is helpful for leaders. And we can take a lot of, I mean, a lot of the learnings around this we can see in child development, and so it starts us right from the moment we're born. For example, I forget the author's name, but she wrote a book called The Oxytocin Factor, and there's an example of the way that premature babies in NICU, in the NICU, will actually gain weight faster when held skin to skin. They call it the ca kangaroo care. When held skin to skin, they actually gain weight faster because oxytocin lowers stress and boosts growth. And so there's this particular quality of care, which you might call loving, that is essential for growth and life there. Similarly, Stephen Porges has done a lot of Safe and Sound Protocol, I think is the name of the work here. It's music, but that was inspired by something that's very just a very organic process, which is that children that hear a caregiver's warm prosodic, so prosody in the voice, like a melodic, warm melodic voice, calms them instantly, and the body knows it's. The body registers this lilting sounds in our voice, that kind of like the cooing sounds of a caregiver as an a cue of welcome, an indicator of safety. Okay, so these are things that happen at the biological level almost universally, because there will be children who respond differently, but this is a common, you know, this is common of I would probably hazard to guess all mammals. In fact, we can kind of come back to that later, because there's, you know, one of the fascinating things I've often taken Brands to Walls is talks a lot about what we can learn from different animals as well about love, and I'm very interesting there. But so there's a few things. Okay, leadership behavior in a sense, right? So there Thomas Lewis, Farhad Amini, and Richard Lannan wrote a book called A General Theory of Love. It was one of the earlier texts, actually, but a lot of the science in that stands holds today, and actually now there's a lot of supporting science that sort of expands on that. But one in that they describe what I call, what we at the Somatic School call, the three R's, and that is resonance, regulation, and revision, or you could say limbic resonance, limbic regulation, limbic revision. So again, this back to coming back to our mammalian nature. Okay, so the first is resonance, and this is the idea that our nervous systems, as they put it, are demonstrably attuned to those. Our nervous systems demonstrably attuned to one another. We our nervous systems will literally. Daniel Goleman also speaks about this in Social Intelligence. The idea that our nervous systems will literally kind of link, and there's a like a with others, and there's a certain kind of synchrony that is made possible by what Daniel Siegel calls our resonance circuits, which includes like mirror neurons. The insula, the, you know, different parts, different brain regions, including mirror neurons, and this actually is our sort of the neurophysiological basis of empathy, right? And so we resonate with others, okay? And resonance is you could think of that as an as a kind of love. I mean, remember that limbic resonance, limbic regulation, limbic revision are all these three authors' attempts to kind of codify love in a sort of scientific way, right? And so empathy and attune and really tune our brains to one another. That synchrony means that you actually have this very beneficial in coaching sessions, but also when we're coaching, when we're leading others, what that might look like is for example, noticing shifts in our own system when interacting with another. For example, if you're sensitive to it, and if you listen, and if you don't invalidate the experience, you may notice that you experience a contraction in your system, like maybe a tightness in the chest or throat, or maybe like a heaviness in the face or something at a certain moment in an interaction with someone. We can pause there for a moment, look at the other, you know, attune ourselves to the other person. Maybe we notice that that something we said has activated them in a way, or they've shut down a little bit. They've gone very quiet. They've withdrawn, and we might pause for a moment, just say something like, you know, something like, you know, just checking in, Charlotte. Everything, you know, any thoughts on this, or curious how your experience, what your experience is in this moment, or how your how this is landing with you, things like that. And that's, I often say, I say, like, you know, to be heard beyond words is deep listening, you know, and yeah.
And that resonance is really interesting. Just that I know you've got the other two in a minute, but I just wanted to capture that sense of, like, you know, we often talk about how leaders bring the weather with them. And so what I'm hearing there in your wonderful example there, a real practical of being aware of the self and then aware of the other, and aware of the weather that you're bringing, and that, you know, effect on the other, tuning into that and that limbic resonance. I often talk about something I've just coined as a kind of systemic resonance. You know, so we think about obviously self, other, but then the impact on the system, and how resonant is the system. I just wanted to interject there because I'm loving what you're saying.
Yeah, we talk about this all the time. So, just a quick point on what you were saying about the weather that you're bringing. I mean, this is absolutely right. It's like being aware of what am I bringing inside. And you might actually, as a leader, might acknowledge or name that. Now, I just want to name that I'm actually feeling a little off today, I just want to name that I'm a bit stirred up by the conversation we had with David earlier, you know, and I'm carrying some of that into this meeting. So just want to name and acknowledge that. You know, that basically helps others know that when you're a bit short with them, or a bit more kind of a bit more you kind of cut someone off a little bit, that they may be able to give a little bit more grace for that, you know, and say, okay, that's that self-awareness piece. It's just sort of almost naming that. It also opens up, it creates psychological safety, and it opens up the possibility that others may do the same. And which is amazing, because that then develops this kind of radical candor, you know, within a within an organization where people can actually just name what's happening for them within reason, you know, of course. Like, I will say this though, that concept that you may, when you're interacting with another, you may notice a contraction in your chest or a tightness in your throat, is not to necessarily say that that's you being aware of your own weather conditions, but actually leaning into the possibility that your body, through the mirror neurons, insular system, and you know, these different brain regions associated with what Daniel Siegel calls the resonant circuits, pick up what's happening in other people's systems. And that's a, you're like a tuning fork, and that's truly resonance there. You know, that's what we mean by resonance,
And
right?
I think that's so
Fascinating.
fascinating. You know, I talk about that all the time because, you know, I used to, you know, I've learned more and more about more this kind of, I would call empathic tendencies I have and picking up. And I, you know, you hear a therapist talking about this and learning that, you know, before the person came in, they weren't feeling anxious. And then they come out and they go, well, why am I feeling anxious now? Because they're picking up on that and learning the difference between you and the other. And for me, that's certainly been a journey. Is that mine? Is that not mine? Am I picking up on the other? And that empathicness, that resonance. I think you're talking to that.
Yeah, that does take some discernment to know what's yours, what are you picking up on, and also appreciate that ultimately, if you're registering it in your body, it's all yours in a certain way. I mean, that sounds strange, because the reason I say that is because sometimes one of the things I hear is, you know, I've picked up all this from the other person. How do I release it? And it's often put to me with a slightly tone of blame, almost like I feel like this now because I've picked up something that belonged to the other person. They gave it to me, and I don't want it. I want to give it back, or I want to let it go. That's exactly how it works. Because if you actually have enough resource and capacity online, then other people can be in deep crisis, a real set, real, really, really dysregulated states, and we can actually hold them in that without getting thrown ourselves. And we may actually feel within our body certain intensities, certain moments, you know, but then we just use that as data. And that's okay. And the more we attune to that, the more we recognize that our bodies do, we do feel one another. We do kind of almost feel each other within our own systems. We're not nearly as separate as we appear to be, you know, that from that perspective. Then if you can acknowledge that as a valid source of data, then you can start to just get curious. For example, at the somatic school, we train a skill that we call looping. And this is where we say, as I heard you say that, I noticed a tightening in my throat that puzzles me. I'm wondering if that means anything to you. Or I'm noticing a tightening in my throat that I'm curious about. I'm wondering what's your experience in this moment? So in other words, you're sort of like being aware, tracking your own experience, being aware of what's coming up for you in your somatic awareness. And then kind of, is that connected to some of my material? And if not, great. Great. That's a very fantastic source of information about what might be
Absolutely.
going on in the system,
Yeah.
basically.
Totally. And you know what? We
Yeah.
use that in coaching all the time.
Yeah.
So using sense of self in service of the other.
Yeah. Self as instrument, basically. Yeah.
Absolutely. So, and I talk about that a lot in my kind of supervision and mentoring practice as well, working with coaches as a check-in, right? What is, you know, is this my stuff, or is this something that's coming up in the space between us, as we have this conversation? What's going on there? And I love what you're saying there about being curious. It is all about curiosity. It's all about being in a space of noticing what is going on that I within my field of awareness that I can, you know, bring to this conversation as and when appropriate, and being curious about it. And what I'm also hearing there is, and you know, speak about too, is that sense of being curious, but also being able to let go, being able to not take on. And I've heard that before, so I again resonate with what you're saying then, Nathan, about certain, you know, certainly I've had that experience of coaches saying, well, I've taken all this stuff, and how do I protect myself, how do I protect my and actually, no, there's a sense of, okay, well, yes, we might experience or notice some some resonance, some kind of sensations that we have. We don't have to hold on to those. We can let those go. We can allow it to pass through. It can be almost like water passing through. It doesn't have to cling. We don't have to become attached to it. And we can, we can bring in all sorts of things like visualizations and things to be able to enable us to do that. But those are all kind of tools, if you like. But we don't have to allow the things to sit. And like you say, we can sit with someone in deep grief or deep pain. We don't have to take that on board. We can still be very sensitive to it, very aware of it, very curious about it, notice its impact, but we don't have to take it on.
And if it does linger, if it does remain beyond that interaction, whether in coaching or in a leadership exchange, then that may be an indicator that there is something of ours that got kind of pinged or tweaked or rubbed up against something a little close to the bone, something that reminded us of something else in our lives at one point. And that can be a wonderful opportunity. I think about I once heard somebody say, I was considering getting like re relationship therapy at one point, thinking we're all can become increasingly aware of our attachment styles and things like that. And then I remember somebody commenting on this. Obviously, many would may disagree with this, but they said, you can't really grow relationally outside of relationship. So in other words, what they were saying was that when you're in a relationship, those interactions are kind of revealing to you the places that you may have unresolved or unintegrated material. And that's can we kind of approach that as a can we kind of say, great. Great. I mean, it's a bit of a tall order for many, but to say, okay, something's come up in here that needs my attention, and can I take that to an appropriate, preferably like a professional space in which I can work through that and explore that. So for how that applies, I guess, to leadership is also to be aware. If we carry something with us, is there a space outside of our organization where we might get the support we need to tend to that, to give it the time and attention it might need to.
Nathan,
As you're
you had, oh, sorry, Emily. I was, yeah.
well, just on that point, what you're saying there about it's in relationship, and when we're in relationship, that is, as we're talking about, it's all about love. It might be romantic love, or it might be familial love. It might be all sorts of different types of love. But even in a leadership role, there is love. And when we're in relationship where there is love, then there is the opportunity for growth. I think there's almost like a quality of love that, if we allow it to be there, shines a light on what we need to shift and grow and evolve and develop.
Yeah, this is a big one. But that might be a conversation for another day potentially. But there's or maybe we'll see if it there is something. I notice that. Okay, so Johnny, I'm mindful that we have the other two of the three R's to get
That's
to,
what I was
and
going to come in on. Yeah, just for the listeners, there was another 2 hours.
yes.
You
Shall we do
read
that
me.
then? Let's start there, and then I perhaps we come back to this point because it's interesting, and yeah, we'll see if we've got time. So okay, cool. So okay, so we've spoken about resonance, and then the second is so we've got resonance, you've got regulation and revision. So now let's go to regulation. So when it comes to regulation, how that relates limbically, relationally, and as it relates to love, is the notion that love, in a sense, at this level, it really is about offering cues of safety. We spoke about this before, I believe, in a previous episode. Well, I think we spoke about co-regulation and the cues of welcome. So there are cues of warning and cues of welcome. So if we are showing up with our direct reports as a leader, showing up with our members of staff, and continuously we have flat affect, monotone of voice, rigidity in the system, etc. We are sending cues of warning to our staff members. Now, we can't, it would be unkind to say to someone, well, just stop doing that, because all of those sort of nonverbal expressions are a reflection of the autonomic state. So actually, really with compassion and care, we can say that leader to that leader, what can you do to basically take care of your nervous system? What can you do to find ways to maybe first of all learn more about the nervous system, secondly find ways that work for you to regulate your nervous system, self-care, and ways to kind of get that sufficient deactivation during the day and at the end of the days, and etc. As we kind of have these cycles, humans have this, all living beings have the cycles of activation, deactivation, activation, deactivation, and at least kind of oscillatory. So we need to be aware when the time is come for that deactivation in organizational settings. That's so rare. In fact, when we're expected to be on from 9 to 5 or later, as is often the case, or and earlier, so starting earlier in the day and maybe even going later into the night. And there's an expectation that you are just on and you are active and engaged that entire time. Our biology just isn't set up for that. We need rest periods, and that can even be like these kind of micro rest periods, just some parasympathetic renewal. It could come by having like a nice cup of chamomile tea at one point and just looking out the window for a while. That's fine, but anything like that, or having a nice chit chat with someone instead of something that's about that has to be productive and have certain kind of like organizational outcomes, so those are important. And then that supports our own regulation. Then how that works relationally in terms of how we are loving towards another, it that we are then more likely to then have expressions of the cues of welcome, which, so where we said the cues of warning before, a flat affect, monotone of voice, lack of eye contact, maybe rigidity in the system. These cues of welcome are the Duchenne smile, which is a sincere smile that shows creases in the corner of the eyes, a natural kind of flexibility in the system of like a natural tilt in the head, prosody, as we mentioned before, like a melody in the voice, that kind of lilting ups and downs in the voice. And that sends cues of welcome, supporting co-regulation. There is one way that we train at the somatic school, which is a way to kind of bring that online, in a way that's authentic. Because the nervous system will outsmart any kind of feigning of those cues, right? Any kind of performative co-regulation will just will not work for the nervous system. So one thing we can do is something we call sourcing and beaming, and I'm pretty sure we have spoken about this before. But it's where we basically, it's just one way to do it. And it comes from the school of practice called Hakomi, which they call it loving presence. So basically, you as you're interacting with someone, you just notice about them their whole way of being. It doesn't need to be from the details of what they say. It could be with the way that they hold themselves. It could be with the sparkle in their eyes, the spark in their eyes that sort of says, I'm infused, I'm engaged, and you find that inspiring. So basically, we need to find something that is inspiring or nourishing for us about the other in every moment. It does two things. One, it brings up, draws our attention out. That's a form of orientation. Already, orientation begins to support our nervous system regulation. So drawing our attention outside is a form of orientation. That's our visual sense perception, and it's helping us to bring our signal to our brainstem of the new and neutral now, basically, like this new information of the kind of this present moment. And so that's good. And then we say, okay, so from that, what can I see or what do I experience of the other that's inspirational, inspiring, or nourishing for me? And hopefully, if we do that and let that shape us from inside and let it reveal itself in our demeanor through the tone of our voice, our facial expressions, etc., hopefully that will bring those cues of welcome online in a very organic, sincere way, because we're inspired and we're nourished. And naturally, it's probably going to lead to us more smiling, more prosody in our voice, more welcome of that person, basically sending those cues of welcome, helping co-regulation. So that's the second R.
I love that shining and beaming, and you did mention it in one of the previous episodes. And what a great kind of practical application of and what is seeing that in the other and experiencing that. And the third R, what's the third R?
So the third R basically is revision, and this is the idea that as Louis Cozzolino, difficult, I always struggle saying his surname. He's an interpersonal neurobiologist, does a lot of work on like the neuroscience of psychotherapy, says that therapy works because love rewires the social brain. And this is what in the general theory of love they're talking about when they talk about revision. We talk about the idea that effective psychotherapy, and by extension, any change work succeeds not through insights alone, but through what is known as limbic revision. It's the repatterning of neural pathways via this kind of loving, attuned relationship. And so it's important that we recognize that this idea of being a generative presence, this idea that, kind of like love heals, or, what's that? Isn't that expression love heals a wounds or something like that? And time. I think I got that mixed up.
I also heard, you just reminded me of another one. A wonderful phrase someone I used to know said is that love brings up most unlike itself to be healed.
Oh, perfect. We've been talking about that a lot recently at the Somatic School, actually, about how there's certain conditions, and this is really what we emphasize in the training. It's like there's certain conditions that create an environment within which what is unintegrated come forward to be integrated, exactly as you just said. And that time and time again, that's exactly what we see. So this is really about, like, as a leader, recognizing that we play a far more significant role than we might think. If we think about ourselves as not only chief executive officer, but chief co-regulator. How might that be? How might that be to see ourselves as the CCR,
I love that. Just need to pause that for a moment. The CCR, I love that. The chief co-regulator is wonderful.
And because I think that that's we that that when you think about leadership, another form of part of leadership is to we are the bottom line for the entire organization, right? Ultimately, and we bear the full risk. Well, sorry, there I'm talking about business owners. But let's take senior leadership. They are, we are kind of responsible, and we recognize that if you take radical responsibility as a leader, you recognize that any problems that are happening at some level, we have created at some level. Co-created, naturally, like things have been, things are outside of our control that may happen and are problematic, but we have to, if we take radical responsibility for that, we look at what was our part in that, basically. And but then also radical responsibility can be about saying, what, like, we come back to that whole thing about what's the nervous system of our organization and how am I impacting that? When we see that when things trickle down in kind of more traditionally hierarchical organizations, what am I doing that's either supporting or it's either regulating or dysregulating, organizing or disorganizing the organism of my organization, basically. And I think that that's important to recognize that we can play a very important role in basically, when we talk about bringing out the best in others, that are re the repeat experience of what we might call this kind of loving presence, this kind of loving quality of our interaction, the repeat experience of that is culture forming. We're literally forming culture. Some people might say that's not the culture I want. Fair enough. But if you look at someone like Gary Vaynerchuk, who many people kind of misconstrue as kind of a hustle culture kind of guy, he's actually a huge proponent of kindness within the organization. His Gary Vaynerchuk is a great kind of message of, that we get good work done by loving one another. And yet he's also somebody who's, a high achieving kind of super producer. So, someone like that, I like the idea that love and productivity are not mutually exclusive. In fact, you could argue that love will in fact have a positive impact on our bottom line, basically.
Absolutely. Oh gosh, Nathan, there is again such an incredibly rich conversation. I feel kind of pain at having to bring this to a close. We've touched on so many different aspects, the idea of state story and strategy, the kind of that beautiful pure form of love, agape, unconditional selfless love, and the fact that it's a doing, it's a work, not just a feeling. The attuned presence, it co-regulates, it can rewire, it can reorientate meaning. You spoke about many of the practices that you offer in the somatic school as well, to lead with love and leave with love. Really fantastic, some really beautiful practical examples of that as well, and how to touch on those aspects of resonance, regulation, and revision. So much in there, and I love what we just brought to with a close there, that idea of moving from maybe the title of CEO to CCR, Chief Co-Regulator, because when we bring love into a workplace as a leader, we have the opportunity to really change culture and rewire our brains as well. So it's been an absolute pleasure. And I'm wondering if there's any last sort of tips that you'd like to offer our listeners as we bring this conversation to a close.
I would say, let me see. I got to feel into that if that's all right. Take a moment there. Okay, one thing, a practical thing. I think that at any moment in time, throughout our day-to-day, as a business leader of any kind, if we can have interactions, any moment where we notice within ourselves something that says, this doesn't belong, you know. And I don't mean just within the organization and culture, of course, that's how firing and hiring decisions get made, but I'm talking about any moment where we say, this isn't welcome here, and we get tight and we contract. I think that's probably a good moment to see if it's possible to open, to kind of expand and include. Because I do believe, and it speaks to something you brought up earlier, and we didn't really get a chance to speak about it completely, Emily, but it does, there is something about an all-inclusive, all-embracing quality of attention that seems to catalyze like interrelational flow, interpersonal flow, you know, and that, you know, kind of brings us back to the yes and then all those other qualities that we bring in terms of the nervous system. There's something in that. There's something in that. So that's a practical thing. And then just in case, and I'm sorry, because if you had intended not to edit this out, and just in case you want this as an alternative. I actually wrote a little thing. It's just like a paragraph I thought kind of summarized. So I could just read this. Yeah, because I wanted to kind of encapsulate like what we're talking about when we mean love. Like, what does love mean? So I wrote this. So basically, yeah. So a final kind of concluding comment on love is that love is an embodied way of being together. And when we offer attuned, non-controlling presence, bodies register safety through oxytocin, vagal tone shift, minds open to new learning, as attachment repair, integration, relationships become just and mutual through partnership rather than domination, and through partnership rather than power over kind of approaches, and we can do this through, you know, practiced daily. We can practice this daily through rituals or breath, voice, attention, and care. Love becomes this operating system for change, basically, for pe persons, for teams, for cultures. That's.
I love that. Love becomes the operating system, and you know the empowerment of love, and as you said earlier, the loving presence to bring out the best in others.
Nice. Exactly. Beautiful. Yeah, thank you so much again, Johnny and Emily, for another rich and wonderful conversation. I have felt the love today and it's appreciated. Yeah.
Yeah, thank you, Nathan. And I'm feeling, yeah, thank you for teaching again around the shining and beaming. I'm really feeling a sense of that. And as you've just said, feeling that sense of love. and that kind of heartfelt, heart-centered, and embodied feeling. It's been wonderful. So thank you so much. And just for everyone listening, again, a reminder, we've just been listening to Nathan Blair, founder of the Somatic School, talking to us today about somatics, love, and leadership. Emily, anything else from you before we
No, I don't think so. So, absolutely. Thank you so much, Nathan. Thank you all for listening. It's goodbye from me.
And it's goodbye from me. Thank you.